This episode of the Steve Dates Island podcast is brought to you by HardSleeperMusicGroup.com. Get into and enjoy the funky quirkiness of Hard Sleeper Music Group. They're an independent music production company and label based in Oakland, California. Hard Sleeper Music Group specializes in urban and electronic music for artists, radio, and TV and film. We offer costumes, instrumentals, songwriting, and music audio products. Also, pro audio services and post-production. They have everything from voiceover, hip-hop and R&B, soul, electronic, indie, trip, dance, deep house, glitch hop, you name it. They got it. Dubstep, downtempo, chill out, everything, absolutely everything. To get in their deals, go to www.hardsleepermusicgroup.com, or you can find them on Facebook and Twitter. Their Facebook is facebook.com/hardsleepermusicgroup, and their Twitter is twitter.com/hsmgsound28. Before getting the podcast started, I want to plug in some dates for y'all. First of all, shout out to everybody that came up to Echoes Under Sunset last night. It was a super blast. I did some stand-up comedy. It was a great show. So thanks for coming, guys. It was really, really awesome. I'm going to be performing this upcoming Friday, improv comedy with my team, Eldon Farlow, at the Danger Room. For all details, go to stevedes.com/tour. And also this Saturday, I'm performing this Saturday, January the 13th, I believe it is. Yes, the 13th. Am I correct? Am I right? No? Yes? What? The 11th. My bad. The 11th. The 11th, I'm going to be performing with my team, also Eldon Farlow, at IO West at the Block Party in Hollywood Boulevard. For all details, go to stevedes.com/tour. I'm also performing stand-up comedy this upcoming Friday. I'm going to be somewhere performing. I'm not sure. Go to stevedes.com/tour. I'm performing tonight at the Tribal Cafe in downtown Los Angeles. And also on Saturday, I'm performing at The Spot in Culver City, stand-up comedy. For all those details, go to stevedes.com/tour. And also, don't forget to rate and review this podcast. It really helps out the podcast, so I really appreciate the people that have been lately reviewing and rating the podcast 5 stars. Thank you. Thank you, guys. I love you so much. All right, guys. You guys are super ready to get this podcast started. I am so ready. Let's go.
You are now listening to the Steve Dez Island Podcast. Get ready for some tropical conversations and some refreshing guests. Now, here's Steve Dez.
Hey, what's going on, people? Steve Dez in the freaking building. Yeah, it's me, Steve Dez, and I'm here with a brand new Steve Dez Island podcast. The podcast, I bring my famous, talented, and amazing friends here to my island, to my private luxury island. And we get to talk about, you know, different things, the industry, what's happening in our lives, you know, the new year. We're in 2014, man. It's insane. It's going crazy, man. I saw a car on fire last night. That's a whole nother story. But today's guest is not only an amazing, great comedian, He is also a talented writer.
Yeah.
I just discovered this. He's a dessert connoisseur.
Connoisseur.
And
you get it.
And he also should be the next host on The Price is Right. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for your one and only Mark Alexander.
Hey, everybody.
What's going on, man?
Good. Good to see you, Steve.
Good to see you, man.
Yeah.
Dessert connoisseur.
That's what I am. That's my day job.
Do it in your most evil French accent.
I am the dessert connoisseur.
Dessert connoisseur. So, for people who don't know what a dessert connoisseur is, Can you please explain it to them?
Oh, yes. So, I basically sell Filipino desserts at farmers markets.
Oh.
Okay. Very simple. But
to Filipino people?
No, not always. You know, Filipinos, Latinos, Hispanics, All the Browns love my desserts.
All the Browns love my desserts, man.
My boss makes some really good desserts, and she gave me the job position. And I think dessert connoisseur is a perfect way to describe it instead of team member.
Do you actually make the dessert or you serve it?
I used to help out in the kitchen. I don't do so much anymore. But, you know, I serve it. Comes to me in a giant cooler, 80 to 100 desserts packed in. And I just sling those babies out to the farmers markets.
Yeah, because before, like, they used to, oh, yeah, you make your cheesecake and everything. And we just grabbed it out of the fridge and just put it on a plate and decorate it, like, really pretty. And that's it.
Right.
But we didn't really, like, make the desserts that were bought already. Or just...
Oh, no, we make everything in-house at our bakery out in Sherman Oaks.
Oh, that's cool.
Which is really cool. Every time I go to visit, it's
shout out
to
Sherman Oaks.
Shout out to the Sherman Oaks Valley folk. According to the iPhone, you're going to be 85 degrees today, so keep on roasting. Day 2, January 2nd.
Hell yeah, man. And the new year is here, so how do you feel about it? Like,
Oh, new year. It's...
You got new goals, or is it just the same for you?
Well, I spent last year with no resolution, and it ended up focusing on stand-up. Mm-hmm. And I think this year is going to focus on taking stand-up and writing a little more seriously. I've done things kind of haphazardly last year. Mm-hmm. I want to do a little bit more of that bad boy.
Dude, that bit, I actually, we got to talk about this, like how we met, because you guys need to know how we met.
Right.
And we met at the Ice House. We were both auditioning, right, for the Saturday something, the first month thing that
right.
they do. Then the David McNeary All-Star Showcase on February.
Yeah.
It's coming down. When's your date again? February?
My date is February 16th because people like you took all the cards. And there's no more room for February 9th.
So if you want to go and check him by himself on February, he's going to have 50 minutes of material
because
he's the only one booked for that show. Then check him out on the 14th. My phone's ringing. That's unprofessional.
Oh, man. You're screwing
What's
up already.
Happening? What's happening?
Where is your phone, by the way?
I don't even know. it's over here.
The phone's right behind
it's
you.
It's right behind me.
Oh, jeez.
Why do I have this alarm, dude. Why do I have an alarm right in the middle of the podcast? Like, we just started this.
I do have about 20 alarms set every day.
Every day? I only have two. I cannot have more than two.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man, I got one for 6, 6:15, 6:30, 7, and then I have to be at work at noon. So, you know, got lots of
You work today at noon?
No, I don't work today, thankfully.
Okay. I was going to say, whoa.
I work tomorrow.
Mm.
Yeah, we did meet at the Ice House.
Mm-hmm.
And it's insane because when you asked me to be on the podcast, I looked up one episode in particular, and it was it was something random, and it ended up being the episode you recorded right after we met at the Ice House.
Really?
Yeah, it was so fucking amazing.
Did I talk about it?
Yeah, you talked about the Ice House. You talked about the show before, and I wanted to bring this up. You talked about Vince. Vince and I are good friends. Did you not know that?
Vince? Which one's Vince?
Vince is the high school kid with the Anthony Jeselnik type voice and delivery you talk about.
Oh, him, yeah.
Yeah.
I really like that kid. The only thing is, like, if he goes like that to the comedy, straight to a comedy club, he's going to have conflicts. Especially if you go to a place like Comedy Store that a lot of, like, veteran comedians, they're, like, really, like... If you have a joke that they have it, they tell you to drop it, like, right there.
Mm.
Or, you know, they try to not cause as much conflict. But I know it could be... Because I was seeing him, and I saw a lot of Jeselnik, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
It's great, because sometimes I do stand-up, and they say, oh, I saw a lot of... one of the people that they always say is John Leguizamo. Like, I have that type of energy. Oh, yeah, I see a lot of Leguizamo in you. But when they're referring, that's like they see an essence of it, but they don't necessarily see jokes of him on me.
Mm-hmm.
They just see the energy and the essence of it.
Right.
But with him, I saw a lot of Jeselnik essence-wise, but I saw also some jokes that were... I mean, he was talking more about his high school stuff, so it's more particular to him. But the way he was doing it, it was so Jeselnik that he only has to modify that a little, tweak it a little. It was killing, though.
Yeah,
but
he does really, really well.
Yeah.
He always posts videos of him performing wherever, and I do watch all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to say, I mean, he has really funny material, but those crowds are really, really into it. They are really into it.
It's a really captivating sort of performance. It's it's weird because I was just watching Jessel Nick's like new special Caligula, and it's so weird because at least I'm a fan. I'm a big fan of writing. I'm a big fan of comedy as well. But you know, now at the point that I'm at, like, I've been watching comedy since I'm like fucking like 5 years old, till now, that it's sort of hard for me to laugh when I would laugh more at bad comedy than when I laugh to like good, great comedy.
Really?
So, yeah. For some reason, I don't know. I'm like at that level. Like whenever I see somebody bombing, that's when I really laugh. That makes me laugh so much.
Oh man, you gotta hit up some more open mics. It's just full of that.
Oh, I know.
Oh man.
Have you been to the open mic in the Ice House?
No, I've never been to the open mic. That's the Wednesday show, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never been. I work on Wednesdays. I get off at 6:30, so right when the show has just started. So I never get a chance to make it over there.
You can go, man. You talk to Ari's cool. You tell him that you're going to be late and to put you in the lineup and whatever, put you whenever he can. Like, cause, I mean, it depends. There's some spots that there's only, like, 8 people because everybody's out of town. Oh, there's some spots that... there's like 24, but you know, everybody gets 4 minutes. Sometimes when there's less, you know, they get more, and it's a great, like, I honestly feel like you can't bomb at that place. Like there's really? No, like when you even bomb at that place, that's when I that's one of the places I try out a lot of material because is when you bomb there, you feel happy. Like for some reason, it's like, I don't know, is the whole vibe of the Ice House. I just love that comedy club. It's just great. Because, like, if you bomb at the Comedy Store, you feel bad.
Right.
Like, you really... Like, I bombed at the Comedy Store before, and you feel really bad.
Jeez.
And, but, like, if you bomb specifically there, it's like, you feel happy. Like, you're like, oh, okay, that's cool. I'll try it again next day, you know?
Right.
Like, if I had comedy clubs like that before in my day, like, I would totally be doing stand-up, like, since I'm 10.
Right.
All the time.
Oh, you know, like, you know, we met at the Ice House. We've seen each other once.
Yeah.
That one day at the Ice House. And it was a lot of fun. I got
to say. Yeah, we went to Roscoe's.
We went to Roscoe's Chicken and Waffles afterwards. The most appropriate thing to do after.
Oh, hell yeah.
After killing. We all killed.
We all killed.
You know.
That's correct.
It was a group of four
that
of
whole,
us.
Oh, my God. You killed me with those bits. Specifically the microphone one. And then you said, like, oh, you killed my bit. I don't have the... My whole bit was with the Ice House letters.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's interesting because... For the first couple of months, I was doing stand-up seriously. I was writing every bit word for word. I was putting in applause breaks. And then I hit this point where I'm gonna...
You were like, joke, applause break.
Yeah, seriously.
Standing ovation over here.
Yeah, that pretentious of me. And then I reached this point where I have to be more spontaneous on stage. And so it came time for that Ice House audition, and I rushed straight over there. I had no idea what I was going to talk about. And it just so happens that every time I go out, I have this protractable pen. Like an old like teaching pen, so it's a small little pen. But then you can extend it outwards, and it's like a little pointing tool. You know, before they had laser pointers. So I had one of these bad boys that I found in my grandmother's house years ago, and I've been carrying with me to open mics. I've never ever used them. I never used it. And then we get to the Ice House, and we're doing the audition out in the main room, and I studied graphic design, typography, letters, and all that. And I'm looking at the Ice House, and the spacings in between each individual letter is so off. I was so distracted. I couldn't really listen to anybody on stage.
You didn't listen to me?
No, I listened to you because we talked a little bit before.
Okay. So correct.
I made sure to listen to you. I made sure to listen to Chauncey.
From Oakland.
Oakland, yeah. Oh, she's a sweet person. She really is. I mean, well, that's another person I've only met once, but she's really sweet. She's just really nice.
And that was her first time trying stand-up, too.
Yeah, but she's a huge fan of stand-up. She goes to the Ice House and Laugh Factory and all that. She's a product of stand-up, and she's going to do really well. But, yeah, then they moved us into stage two, or the annex, as some people like to call it. And there is no more Ice House on the back of the wall. And we have no PA system. We have no microphone.
You only have small signs, super small signs saying stage two.
Right, yeah. It's so sad. It's like an 8.5 by 11 sign on the wall. happens at stage two. It's probably printed out on an inkjet, a Xerox copy. I don't know. It was really bad. But, yeah, I had a lot of fun in that set. I had a lot of fun watching all the comics. I was nervous, man. I've never done an audition for a comedy club. Because I don't go out to the Laugh Factory. I don't go out to the Comedy Store. I don't go out to the Improv, really. Mm. You know, I thrive in the open mics, at the bowling alleys, at the coffee shops, at the bars.
Those are the best, man.
They're great.
If you can handle that crowd, you can handle any crowd.
Oh, seriously, yeah. Oh, they're so much fun. But yeah, I was so nervous. And then when Dave talks to me afterward and tells me, oh, you know, I loved your set. I would like you to be on the show. I was so excited. And I come back and our mutual friend Juanjico's like, oh, yeah, Dave books everybody. She diffused the situation so quickly, but which is great because I was growing that egotistical head about, oh, yeah, I made it into the ice house.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, no, this is easy. But, you know, it's a first step, man. It really is a first step. I'm excited.
But just talking about that comment, like, he books everybody. I say the majority got booked, but I won't say everybody got booked.
Oh, no. Definitely from that night, there were quite a bit of people that did not get booked.
Oh, hell yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I personally didn't know that was established comedian, the one that went before me, because I think I went second.
Oh, we're talking about Jamar.
Yeah.
We're talking about Jamar.
Faggots! Yo, you fucking faggots.
Suck my dick, faggots.
Suck my dick. When I have a kid, I'm going to kill him if he's a faggot. I was like, oh, my God. It's in your face.
Jamar is a hard pill to swallow.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm learning to love his comedy a little bit more. But
he was clearly fucking around that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, very clearly.
Super
I don't, clearly. I'm that pretty sure not... he did get booked just because he's gone to the Ice House so many times.
Mm.
But the material that he had that night was borderline offensive.
Yeah, super offensive. Like, he did 12 minutes of your mama is so gay jokes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's Jamar.
That's him.
You just got to accept that man for what he is. There's a lot of open micers, lots of comics that are like that. And you just got to accept them for who they are and just be nice to them, but you don't have to interact with them. You don't have to talk to them.
And why don't you go to the Comedy Store and Laugh Factory and all the Improv and all those places in WeHo?
Mm.
WeHo.
Well, I live in an area I like to call East Downtown Adjacent, which is a nice way of saying East L.A.
East L.A.
East L.A.
Where the cholo's at.
Definitely.
Pow, 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 pow.
Yeah, exactly. But I find it a little difficult to head out to West Hollywood. Especially going to sign up for the open mic at the store and a really high percentage chance of you not getting up.
Mm.
It's really difficult for me to fathom driving, you know, 20-plus miles for me to and from.
Well, at least you need to put the Laugh Factory on your book. Come on. Everybody
That's
wants
true.
To do the Laugh Factory.
The Laugh Factory has never interested me.
Never?
Never.
Really?
Yeah.
That was like a huge dream of mine, like, I want to perform at the Laugh Factory.
And you have, right?
Yeah, I have performed out there like 4 times already.
Nice.
So pretty cool.
Well, I know tonight, the time when we're recording this, you got your Flapper show out in the Yoo-Hoo room.
Oh, that's correct. Well, by the time this show is going to be uploaded, that show was awesome, guys. You guys missed an amazing show.
You missed a great show.
You missed an amazing show at Flappers, man. I killed it. I had applause breaks, standing ovations.
Oh, you missed that special guest, Jamar Neighbors. Faggot!
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 He opened my show, and he closed it, too.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the crowd just wanted more of him, so I gave him more of him. I give the public what they want. That's why I'm running for president in 2020.
Right.
You know it.
Jeez, yeah. But, yeah, man, it's... How do I put it? I haven't really shown a lot of interest in the comedy clubs. I'll get there.
You'll get there. Yeah,
of course. I'm not there yet. I realize that I'm not quite there yet. I got quite an ego, but then I'm also very, very aware of that ego, and I realize that, all right, it's going to take me a while because, you know, I'm a year and a half into this, technically 7 months hardcore into it, so I got some time. I got some time to grow. I got some time to write some stuff and all that. You know, I came onto the scene, and I don't think we talked about this, but I came onto the scene, and... I had 8 solid minutes of my girlfriend at the time. And my girlfriend at the time is in a wheelchair. And so I had wheelchairs.
This is true, by the way. This is not a bit or anything.
Oh, this is not a bit. This is not a bit at all. She doesn't know any of my jokes. She heard one of them. She did not care for it. And it was the least offensive of the jokes. But it was more jokes about the situation of living and, you know, being with a person that has such who is in such a situation. And I came on strong because I know you did a comedy class, right?
Yeah, I did one.
Yeah, I did that too. I did a comedy class out in East L.A. Hosted by Jonathan Solomon, who wrote for David Letterman at one point.
Oh, cool.
And so he taught a class of five, my friend and I, and then three 30-something-year-olds and up, how to do stand-up. And then he booked us at the store. So my first show ever was at the Comedy Store in the Belly Room.
The Belly Room?
Up in the Belly Room. Oh, that was a... I bombed hard. I bombed hard.
But
man.
How many people were in the audience, though?
Oh, dude.
Because I've done shows with, like, literally two people there.
Well, they had all the comics out in the lounge, that little small second floor area, looking over the stage. But the entire floor had, you know, people there. The other comics definitely booked the place. They brought their friends. They brought their family. And, you know, I grew up in East L.A., but I don't speak Spanish. I don't relate to a lot of things that are going on in East L.A. I really don't. So part of my material, in addition to the girlfriend jokes, was material about being Spanish and not relating. And that doesn't work when most of the people that are in the room are Hispanic or, you know, Spanish-American. They don't like it. They don't like it at all, and I bombed so hard. But I had one laugh, and I was so excited about that one laugh that I've just been doing it ever since. I really, you had talked about on a previous podcast about what you consider, you know, killing. You know, you'll listen to laughs back on tape and you realize that what you thought was a good set wasn't a good set because the laughter wasn't where it's at.
Yeah.
If I get a laugh, a genuine laugh, that'll carry me for the rest of the month. Just like that. I'm easy to please.
Sometimes I don't even like to, like, I mean, I do it just because it's your duty as a comedian to do it, like, you know, to improve your jokes. Right? Everybody has their own technique, but I started to do that because I've never really, you know, throughout my years, I haven't really been doing it, and it's recording my sets. Mm-hmm. But I don't like that much listening to my sets because sometimes I'm like, I fucking killed this night, and then I listen it back, I'm like... That was kind of whack. Like I wanted bigger laughs than that.
No, definitely. But I think when you look back at your sets, you have to, and we are really delving into comedy here for everyone on the podcast that is disappointed that I'm not a dancer or a model. This is all comedy, guys.
It's all comedy, man.
We probably should have put that up in the beginning. This was going to be an all-comedy podcast.
All-comedy podcast. We're going to talk about a bunch of shit.
All right, yes.
We're just talking about comedy right now. So give us a break.
That's true. That's
true. Take a kick bar or something.
But, geez, what were we talking about? See, I'm not even high. And I have no idea what we were just talking about.
Do you get high?
I do get high.
Oh, for what?
Edibles fuck me up too much, man. Edibles fuck me up too much, but I do have a pipe in my car.
Cool.
And, you know, I pick up some stuff.
It's completely legal in Colorado already.
I know.
It started. Oh, my God. People went crazy. Have you seen the pictures?
I haven't seen any photos.
Oh, yet. I was reading the Huffington Post. Uh-huh. Oh, my God. There was crazy lines. Because it's like you only have to be over 21 and you buy it. That's it. You don't need a license there or anything.
Wow.
And, well, you cannot, you know, go to another state with it. You're not supposed to.
Right.
I'm pretty sure a lot of people are going to do it. You're going to see a lot in the news, like, these people got arrested because they try to sneak in drugs to New York, and it's still illegal there or something.
Right. Well, you know, also, they hiked up the tax rate for marijuana in Colorado.
Why?
25%.
25?
If I remember correctly,
only
on
marijuana. Oh my God!
So that's easily adding about another $50.
Well, I saw a receipt from someone, and it looked pretty like normal to compared to Cali weed. I mean, I guess in like other places, you know, like it's cheaper.
Yeah, I would imagine so. You know, I did want to go visit Denver one of these months.
Mm-hmm.
Not just for the weed.
For comedy. It's a good spot for comedy. There's a good comedy scene out in Denver.
Oh, hell yeah. Back to the comedy. From the weed to the comedy to the weed to the comedy to the comedy to the weed.
Hell yeah. I want to go to Denver so bad, especially now.
Oh, yeah.
But I for sure want to go and check out the comedy scene out there because I know it's a great place to do comedy.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think any place that's not L.A. is a good place to do comedy.
I mean, I don't hate L.A. L.A., you know, L.A. is my boo thing. Mm-hmm. L.A. is my boo thing. But sometimes you definitely need to get away from L.A.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Lots of comics, if you talk to them, they'll, you know, established comics, they'll tell you, don't ever start stand-up in L.A. And I grew up in L.A., so I don't have a choice. But it would be nice to go to Denver for a while, go to other cities for a while. Chicago.
What inspired you to do stand-up? Like, when was the first time you went like, damn, I'm going to do that?
Well, you know, I watched a lot of HBO specials growing up. Back when we stole cable. But it never really caught my eye. Carlin was always a fave. A little bit of Pryor every now and then. Eddie Murphy. But they kind of just went right through me. I saw a lot of George Lopez specials because my family was obsessed with George Lopez for a while. I saw every one of his specials in the 2000s. But it never really caught my eye. And then my best friend takes me out to the UCB out here in Hollywood. And I got to see alternative comedy for the first time. Alternative stand-up at the what used to be called the Comedy Death Ray Show.
What's alternative stand-up? Are you talking about improv or are you talking about like alternative stand-up?
Alternative stand-up.
What's that?
Alternative stand-up, I think it's a lot of, I guess it's the area that I'm in now, technically. It's not club scenes. These are mic shows that you're seeing going on at movie theaters and that, book shows, out at bars. But more professional. It's like a whole nother level to traditional stand-up. And it's weird because, you know, I mean, you're familiar with Comedy Death Ray, right?
Yeah.
Scott Aukerman, all those people. So Scott Aukerman, Patton Oswalt, Kulop, you know, Howard Kramer, all those greats. I guess they would be, if you were to categorize them, they would be alternative comics. Mm. At least that I would.
Have you seen the Comedians of Comedy?
I have seen the Comedians of Comedy. Mm. Have you seen I Am Comic?
Yeah.
That is an interesting one to watch, but. But yeah, so I started watching Comedy Death Ray, going almost every week, and then they had a show called Holy Fuck Downtown, and it was at a one screen movie theater, off Main Street, and I just happened to walk to it one day, and it was in the middle of their first year doing shows, and you'd go and they'd have book comedians like Rory Scovel, they'd have James Adomian, Louis C.K. drop by one week. But the audience attendance was about 20 to 15 people, and this was a 180 seat, you know, movie theater, and 20 people would show up, and I would talk to the host Dave, and he'd be excited but also sort of bummed that it never really took off. But I kept going almost every week, and almost every week sitting in the front, and I met Vince, who we talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. Vince at the time was 16. He was sitting in the front with all his friends, and he was telling me he wanted to start stand-up. And I said, yeah, man, that would be great. And he took the stand-up class, and then he showed me his first video, and it's an 8-minute clip, and he crushed it. And Vince is a good friend of mine, and he's going to do really well in comedy.
Oh, hell yeah. I told him, don't go to college, dude. You're going to do stand-up. That's your life.
Yeah. Maybe
you should,
maybe you should take some electrician classes.
I don't know.
If you want to start a podcast, and like some, you know, electrical classes wouldn't be too bad.
True. Yeah. I was a person, for example, I was raised in it's incredible how the majority of my views have changed dramatically, mm-hmm. especially by exploring more and just feeling the world by myself. But like, I was raised in a household that. It was a poor neighborhood, you know, in Puerto Rico and stuff. Like, the majority of my friends ended up being killed, selling drugs or stealing or doing some shit. I was caught up in the whole stealing group. Mm-hmm. So when I got, I had a little incident like in Borders, the bookstore.
Oh, okay.
I was stealing a bunch of DVDs because I was like trying to sell them and shit. Uh-huh. And like, I got caught by this undercover cop and I almost went to juvie.
Oh, what DVDs were you stealing? Like Criterion Collection movies?
I was at that point. I was stealing like a bunch of porn because I was doing it for the profit because I was selling it like in school and shit. Mm-hmm. Like a, you know, hardcore dealer. Hey, you want this DVD? You want this? just getting my Alvarado on. You see Alvarado? Everybody selling DVDs,
right?
And but I would do that at that. But when I got caught, I remember like it was daylight. I had like. About like 14 like DVDs that I stole, and they were all porn related.
I'm just shocked Border sold porn. that's the part of the story that's like that I'm stuck on is that Border sold porn.
Oh
I
yeah,
I think I would have gone to Borders more often.
Oh hell yeah, Border dude! Sold porn. Oh my god! If I tell all this story, I would go to Borders a lot, and like I would sit and like read and stuff. Mm. And then it got to a point that I wanted like more excitement in my life. Mm. So they had like Playboy mags there, but they had it all covered up. Like it had like a plastic wrap on it,
like a black bag over it.
Yeah.
And it would just have the Playboy symbol on it.
Yeah, so you will have to buy it and then to open it and actually see it. Like, you cannot actually get the magazine out of the bat or whatever. Maybe they did it to protect it from kids or whatever it was. But I will go and rip open the mags and watch the pictures or whatever and then just put it back. And all ripped open and shit. And then when I got caught up with the whole stealing thing and I was getting all the DVDs, I was, you know, I started small, just stealing one, like Stuart Little or whatever, you know, something crazy like that.
Is that the name of the porn? Stuart Little?
Stuart Little. Gay fantasy.
This is some small penis humiliation type of porn shit. Stuart Little.
Stuart Little. Mm. By little, we mean he's Wang. That was the tagline of the DVD.
Classic.
Yeah.
You know, if stand-up or improv or any of this doesn't work out for you, you have a career in tag writing for porn.
Oh, yeah.
I think you'd be really good at that.
Hell yeah, dude. Yeah. I have connections in porn. I actually have friends of mine. I said this story millions of times in the podcast, but I have friends of mine. I have a particular friend of mine that she was doing comedy for the longest time, doing improv and stand-up. She gave herself 4 months to make it in the industry.
Oh, jeez.
And, of course, 4 months passed. Things happen, you know, she made music videos here and there and things, but nothing big, major. Mm-hmm. So she quit, and now she's doing porn.
Oh. Mm. She definitely should have gave herself a little bit more time.
I
think anyone that moves to L.A. thinks they can do it in 4 months to a year. Mm-hmm. And if that doesn't happen, I got to go back. And as an Angelino, it's just fun to watch. It's my guilty pleasure seeing people with timelines.
Oh, hell yeah, dude. Yeah. I met so many people that are like, oh, my God, I'm going to become this big dancer or this big singer or this big whatever. And then you fast forward 6 months later or a year later or whatever. And they're like, oh, what are you doing? Oh, I'm back home just taking care of my kids. So I'm like, what? You got kids? Huh?
Right, because they don't realize because they're in whatever town they're in now or before, I should say. And there's maybe 4 or 5 dancers, maybe a couple of comics, maybe a couple of this. And they come to L.A. thinking they're special. And, you know, it's a lot of times they have something special about them. But they just get lost in a sea of everyone just doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's hard. But you really do got to keep your head down and really just keep working. But some people do come here with some really, really high expectations.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. And
I came here from high. Everybody, pretty much, I believe it's in the majority of people's heads because it was in my head too. I'm like, I'm going to come here and I don't care how long it's going to take me to make it. I'm going to be here. I'm going to try to make it as much as I can and, you know, just move forward and keep doing my thing. And when I came here, I'm like, oh, it's going pretty good. Like, I'm, you know, I'm booking music videos here and there. I'm just getting paid Subway sandwiches, but I'm still doing things. And I'm like, whoa. And then I started getting paying gigs. Oh, shit. Mm. Okay, I'm going to make it in no time. I'm in year 3. I'm still here. Like, I'm not blowed up. I'm not in movies and stuff like that. Right. But I'm still working really, really hard.
Which is fantastic because you came with the right amount of expectations.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is what you love. And you're willing to wait as long as you need to be recognized.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something to be admired, and it's admirable. And you just got to realize that you got to do something else on the side, and while you're pursuing this, you can't just go in full force into comedy and expect to be paid. You can't jump in full force to be an actor. You got to do something on the side first just to support yourself for a while. And you're doing it, man. Year three, you haven't left yet. That's fantastic.
That's correct, man. I'm staying here for the long haul. Like, my mom calls me every day going like, Steven, why are you coming back home? I'm like, Mom, I'm not going back home. Mm. Like, I'm staying here forever. And so she's like, she's trying to move over here. Because she just feels alone over there. Everybody pretty much left. You know, I have three sisters. Mm-hmm. One lives in Georgia, one's in West Palm Beach, one's in Gainesville. The one in Gainesville now is going to the Navy, so she's going to be gone for a while. She's going to be a nurse there.
Oh, wow.
And, my family's all scattered. My grandma just took a plane for the first time.
Oh, where'd she go?
She went to Puerto Rico and she went to New York to visit family. But she's in the Dominican Republic in DR, just chilling in the fucking the countryside, doing nothing, just rocking a chair and eating, I don't know.
Just enjoying that peace time.
The peaches or something. Enjoying peace time, man. But she loves it, man. My mom was like, are you okay? Like, did you freak out because you got into the airplane? She's like, no, that was short. Because like the plane ride from DR to Puerto Rico is like about 40 minutes or 30 minutes. It's really close. But then to New York is like, you know, a few hours.
Right.
And so she liked the one in New York.
That's fascinating that your grandmother is obsessed with travel, but your mother is not. And it's weird how those traits can pass down generation to generation.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it just doesn't carry because, like, my mom has lived in the same general area all her life. L.A. She hasn't really traveled anywhere for a long period of time. And one day I came home and I said, I'm leaving tomorrow. And she said, where are you going? And I said, I'm going to go spend 2 weeks in San Francisco. And I decided this the night before. And she was freaking out. Just the idea of doing something spontaneous and all that just it doesn't carry through her DNA. But then I talked to my grandfather before he passed away, and my grandfather was a traveler. He traveled all over the place. He worked for the state of California, so, you know, there'd be days where he's in Santa Barbara, days where he's in San Pedro, days when he's in San Diego. He was just traveling, working for the state. And so that gene, that travel gene, that adventure gene, if that's even a word, by the way, just traveled and skipped my mom, who's a burrower. If that makes any sense, she stays where she stays, and she's loyal. But then it skipped her, and then just went straight to me. And now I'm like traveling as much as I can.
Do you love traveling?
I do when I get a chance to. San Francisco is probably the farthest.
I mean, if you become a professional comic, you're going to be traveling a lot.
I don't mind that. I got plenty of podcasts to listen to. I don't mind the road. I love to drive.
Mm. You going to do the driving, like the whole thing? Because I was talking more about flying.
Flying scares me.
Really?
Yeah, it scares me. Not that it's gonna crash. It scares me because the popping in the ears.
Put headphones or go to sleep.
No, it didn't work because I was asleep and I had headphones and I was chewing gum at the same time. So I was doing everything you're supposed to do right. And we're landing and we're going to Orlando from LA and we're landing, and all of a sudden I got the worst ringing headache throughout my head, and it lasted the entire descent, which was about half an hour. And I just had, like, the worst headache, and I was so, so angry and fed up. And that's why I hate flying, and I'm scared of it, because that pain was just,
You know what would have helped?
What?
Some edibles.
That's true.
But I freaked the fuck out when I took way too much of a dose. I got this chocolate bar, and I traveled from here. It was, you know, to go back home to Puerto Rico. From here, I went to Miami, and then from Miami to Puerto Rico. And I took this chocolate, this entire, like, crunch bar, basically, of an edible. It was full of weed. And, like, I ate that shit, and when I got it to the plane, like, I got super paranoid, extremely paranoid. When it was like just a little tiny bit of turbulence, I thought the whole plane was gonna crash. And then I just felt this just urge to throw up. So I grabbed the puke bag and I threw up, and then I passed out. And then I woke up and I was already in Miami.
Oh.
And then I went on the plane, the exact same thing happened. The exact same thing. Like, and I was still high, like in Miami. It wasn't until I got to Puerto Rico that it was coming down.
Jeez. isn't it crazy? You take these edibles and you're like, all right, I can afford 4 or 5 hours of my life, and then it's just all day.
Oh my, it's the worst.
I mean, I've done it before because I was going to school for a while, and I'm still going to school. But I was going to school at 7 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. Classes at 7 o'clock in the morning, and they went straight to noon. Okay, so about 5 hours worth of classes, and I had half of an edible chocolate bar at 8 o'clock. And I didn't really feel anything till about, 10, 11. And then I got off from school and I went straight to sleep. And usually, because I took a nap just before I went to work. Hmm. At this time, I was working in Laverne. So I was going from LA to Laverne, and that's over 30 miles each way. And usually taking that nap and eating before I wake up and I'm okay. I woke up and I was higher than ever, and I had to go straight to work, and I had to wear sunglasses and not tell my boss that I was high. And I picked up the giant, the giant van that we drive. It's a huge van. And I took it to Laverne. I drove 30 miles, stoned out of my mind. And then the farmer's market there in Laverne is very compact, very, very, very just compact and just compartmentalized. And I don't know how I did it, because I didn't have much experience driving the van. Besides, going straight and turning left and right, I somehow parallel parked it between these two other big vans without hitting anything. I worked all day high out of my mind. I made like $60 worth, in sales, which is horrible, by the way. I packed up and I got home, dropped off the van, got home, and it was around 10, 11 o'clock, and I was still stoned out of my mind. And that was something I did not plan for at all. Usually it's a couple hours, cool, but this was all day. And it freaked me out.
See, I feel like if I would have been high at work, mm-hmm. I would have been so much productive, especially when I had those really, bad... I mean, I would not do it, if I'm, on set working. I mean, I haven't done really stand-up, really high. Mm-hmm. I've done, just a little. I took a hit.
That was actually going to be my next question for you, is have you done stand-up high?
Oh, no. This past week, my guest was this stand-up comedian from Oregon, Kyle Henson is his name. I don't know if you know him.
I know the name. I don't know much about him, but
he's pretty established on Twitter. He has, a bunch of followers.
Oh, God, I would love that. I got 50 followers. One of them is Pimp Romney.
Pimp Romney.
He's my favorite Twitter follower.
Barack Obama's following me on Twitter.
What?
Hell yeah. I think if you follow him, he just follows you back.
Well, it's kind of...
Mm. He's not really him. It's just one intern.
It's just Hillary.
Just Hillary.
Putting in those hours.
Hillary. 2016 is coming.
I know. Well, you've seen all those photos where it's just her on her phone, on planes?
No, I haven't seen that.
Yeah, there's memes of her just... just photos of her just checking her phone all the time. She's not part of the world when she's traveling. She's just on her phone. And mm-hmm. I just imagine she's just filling up Barack's Twitter profile. She's just tweeting as Barack. I think that's what Hillary does with her time.
What I found hilarious on Twitter is when there's somebody that just follows one person or no one. Like The Rock. He has who knows, 12 million followers, something like that, uh-huh. and he follows no one.
That's
or he
insane.
Follows just one person, something like that.
Not even Mrs. Rock, huh?
Not even Mrs. Rock. It's fuck you. You're just going to tweet about me and read about me. I don't care. Because that's what happens when you tweet. It's just all the tweets that you see is just you when you're not following.
Right, you got to fill it up with followers. I think it's kind of sad.
In a way, it's sad. In a way, it's a little cocky and selfish.
Yeah,
and in a way, it's The Rock, man. What can you do? He's gonna kick your ass.
That's true. Like I said, I have 50 followers, so I kind of have to see what I'm writing because there's not that many followers, and they're not tweeting very, very often. So I get to see all the shit I've written over the last year and a half. And some of them are gold. Some of them are gold.
I lately been unfollowing people, mainly celebrities, because for some reason, I'm following a bunch of celebrities that I don't. It's not even them tweeting, and it's why am I even following you?
Right.
And what's the point of this?
It's just tour dates, and my album drops tomorrow, and this and that, and mm-hmm. I'll be on Charlie Rose. I'll be this. I'll be that.
I like following people, actually celebrities that, respond to you back mm-hmm. and shit. They're interacting with the people, but not here's my new album, iTunes, Beyonce.
Yeah.
16 videos.
I used to talk a lot to Billy Mays the third. Billy Mays the third, so his son. We used to talk a lot on on the Twitter, and then his dad died and he stopped talking to me. So that sucks. That's probably the biggest.
Were you making Billy Mays jokes?
No.
Okay.
I wish. No, I love Billy Mays. I do. His whole pitch and everything, just the way he speaks and the way he delivers.
Hi, right. Billy Mays here.
Yeah. Hi, Billy Mays here for the only thing.
Jam Wow.
No, the only thing I can think of is Chipotle Away, and that's a South Park thing.
OxyClean.
Mighty Mend It. Okay, this is now Brody Stevens.
This is not in any way, shape, or form sponsored by OxyClean. Let me tell you that.
No, we are sponsored today by Audible.com.
Audible.com. Get your free trial. Nah, I'm not. You play video games at all?
I do a little bit. Were we able to hear the song in the beginning, the 50s song in the beginning?
No. We can put it.
No, we don't have to play it. Okay. But Steve had asked me what kind of song do I want to listen to while we're setting up, and I chose 1950s doo-wop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Mr. Sandman, all the classic Teenagers in Love, and it got me in like a good vibe. And that's that type of retro goodness is what I take straight into my gaming. Because I don't have a PlayStation 3, and I don't have an Xbox.
So what do you play?
I play my Wii and my 3DS, and they're filled with classic games.
And what are classic games for you?
You know, like maybe I'll quit comedy if I can finally beat Super Mario Brothers, the original. If I can get past World 8-1.
But you're talking about like the super, like the original one, like the Nintendo.
Original.
Not the Super Nintendo, Nintendo. I haven't played that. I only played, I think, on the original Nintendo. I played the duck hunting game.
Oh yeah,
and that was like one time because I didn't have that console. It's like a neighbor had it, and it was like the biggest thing when he had it.
It really was because it was packaged. You got Mario and Duck Hunt package, and then you had Rob, which is the little robot guy that all he did was move one thing from one side of the room to the other side of the room without moving. He just twisted his body and moved a little disc around. And that's what they sold. Oh, God. Rob's a waste of time.
I sometimes feel like this generation, mm-hmm. in a way, is we're losing a lot of the things that other people had. Like, for example, our parents would say, oh, it was better back in the day, you know, when I was growing up and I was picking fucking plantains in the field. Uh-huh. That's what my mom would tell me. My mom didn't care about me going to school. I had to worry about going to school by myself. But like for now, it's like we used to complain so much about like, oh, TV sucks now. Like it's all reality. Before it was all that and Power Rangers and Rugrats and cool stuff and Dexter's Laboratory. But now, and the point that we are, Netflix already has all those programs. We have computers that we can access all those programs. We can, if we want to play, if we were like, oh, Super Nintendo was way more awesome. We can, my computer right now is a Super Nintendo as well.
Yeah, you can play the Super Nintendo.
Super Nintendo Super and Nintendo 64 as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so after a podcast, if you want to play, I'm down. If you want to play, no. Okay. Then no. And but it ruins the nostalgia because it's like, oh yeah, I want to do that. Like those days were awesome. And then when you actually dive into it, you realize that it wasn't exact. Like the memory was the thing.
The memory is stronger than the actual product.
Yeah, because when I was playing, for example, I was playing the Super Nintendo. I'm like, this game is super easy. Like, I just beat it, like...
What game were you playing?
I play a lot of games. I played Donkey Kong Country.
Oh, geez, Donkey Kong Country, yeah.
So easy.
Nowadays, right?
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Because the games are so complex now that it's like, this is nothing.
Oh, I remember the gopher in the first world would kick my ass. Do you remember that? He was like the first major boss.
Yeah.
And he was surrounded by a pile of bananas. And all he would do is
jump. No, yeah. He would just jump.
Yeah, and you had to just jump on and hit him on the head. It's so easy now. And it kicked my ass as a child.
You know what game really kicked my ass as a child? Super Mario 64.
Really?
Yeah, because at that time, I remember my mom was like basically she was like cleaning houses, but like it was for sure. I don't know how my mom got hooked up like that, but she was cleaning rich people houses, like rich people house, like senators and people like that. Like she was cleaning the house, yeah. And this kid had a Nintendo 64 that back in the day that was like if you had that, you fucking made
it. You're made.
And he had a ton of games, so he just let me play anything. And I put Nintendo Super Mario. I can never pass the first world.
Really?
I was just stuck on the first world.
Oh, geez.
All the time.
Oh, wow. It's crazy how, you know, that's a game I definitely beat on my own. But it's crazy how just the simplest games like that can kick our ass when we're younger.
Mm-hmm.
And we just get so confused. But I think what it was, too, is that was one of the first games that was fully in 3D. And our minds weren't accustomed to thinking in a 3D space.
Mm.
You know, it was always left or right in a side scroller. And now all of a sudden you're Mario and you can go left, right, you know, back, forth. You can double jump. You know,
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it took some people a long time to get their minds assimilated to 3D gaming.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a transitional phase, you know, for a lot of people. I mean, the game I love the most, it's my favorite game from Nintendo 64, is Star Fox.
Star Fox?
Star Fox 64. You ever played it?
I think I played it as a kid, but I haven't played it, like, recently.
Dude, that's the reason I got a 3DS, was to play the 3D version of Star Fox 64, reimagined with new graphics and all that. Oh, it's so good. And they got all the... That was one of the only Nintendo games that had full voice acting in it. You know, at that time, it was the only game to have full voice acting. And actually, now it's still one of the few games that Nintendo produces that has full voice acting.
Yeah. I remember, I used to play a lot of GoldenEye, and it was all like, so you have to read it. It didn't have any voice acting at all.
Oh, God. I loved GoldenEye. I loved shooting Boris in the nuts. That was probably my favorite thing. Because the goal was to save Boris and get him to the end.
Mm-hmm.
And I just shoot him and then just go crazy.
I would shoot him so many times, especially with the golden gun.
Oh, dude. Or you could bitch slap him. That's always fun.
I love the sound.
Oh, God. Such a... just the beginning when he walks out in his... 64 polygon glory, and it's like the worst looking Pierce Brosnan James Bond, and then he shoots the screen and then blood covers it and it says Nintendo. That is awesome.
Have you seen GoldenEye? Not GoldenEye. Well, yeah, GoldenEye, the original movie.
Oh, yeah, man.
The big satellite scene, that was in Puerto Rico. That's that big satellite is in Puerto Rico in Arecibo.
Oh, yeah, that's the weather satellite, right? No. No,
it's observatory.
It's the observatorium, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
I've been there many times.
Yeah?
Sir, yeah. That's when you're a kid. That's when they take you all the time. Well, here's the observatory, and that's all we have here.
Did they ever mention, oh, this is observatory as seen in GoldenEye?
No, they don't say that.
No, they weren't proud
of it? They would just talk about, like, well, you see stars, you know, because they're trying to educate the kids.
Right.
But they never talk about that. That's the fun stuff.
Should educate them with some GoldenEye action.
Yeah, I found that just watching the movie. I'm like, oh, shit.
Huh.
That's Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
And then I Google search it. I'm like, okay, yeah, it's Puerto Rico for sure.
There's a portion of Chinatown, and it's this, like, alleyway, and it's advertised as the alleyway from Rush Hour with Jackie Chan and Chris Tucker. And I'm like, it's an alley. But they advertise the shit out of that corner. I don't know if they still do it, but they used to.
I was just by, where was it, Arcadia, California, or Pasadena somewhere, and I was passing by the street, and I'm like, what street am I in? And when I check, it says, like, Chevy Chase Lane.
Chevy Chase Lane, yeah.
I'm like, that's so awesome.
You're up in the Pasadena, Glendale area at this point, Chevy Chase Lane.
I was like, they just gave him a lane.
Mm-hmm.
Straight up.
Yeah, I think they're kind
of... That's how famous I want to get. Like, I just want to have my own lane.
You want your lane?
The Steve Des lane.
I want to be so famous, they replaced Cesar Chavez Boulevard with the Mark Alexander Street.
And put a statue.
Yeah.
Of you holding a dessert.
Mm. Dessert connoisseur.
And the steak on the side. Showing the space in between the
Oh, yeah, that would cakes. Be so fun. Ah, oh, man. But, yeah, man, I just classic gaming is what I do now. So it's classic gaming, lots of stand-up. I don't really listen to a lot of music anymore. It really is comedy. Comedy has just, enveloped me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a product of comedy. Because I went, like I said, to that show downtown every week for almost 3 years. And I sat in the front almost every week for 3 years. And I saw comics that I hated. They weren't funny. They were the worst. But over those 3 years, and now... They are comics that I respect and I love, and I've watched them grow. And now I'm part of that group, or at least I'm trying to simulate with that group. And I'm seeing them all over town at open mics, at bars, you know, at little cool clubs that are right underneath the freeway or overpasses. And I'm just really like happy to be with these people that I've loved and respected for such a long time. So I am technically a product of LA alternative comedy. And now I don't know if you know about this, but next week, it's about let's say tomorrow. Okay. January 9th.
Tomorrow, January 9th.
Right?
Yeah.
January 9th is a Thursday. Starts the Riot LA Comedy Festival, Alternative Comedy Festival. It's going to run 4 days on one block of LA Street. And there's going to be shows up the wazoo. And the comics that are booked for that show are so amazing. Eddie Pepitone. Do you know Eddie?
No, I don't know Eddie.
Oh, dude. Eddie is someone that... he's fantastic. Eddie Pepitone, Mark Normand, Ian Carmel, Emily Heller. And I could keep going. You could just see it on my face.
Keep going.
I believe Matt Ingebretson's going to be there. And he's a favorite of mine. Jeremiah Watkins.
I know Jeremiah.
Jeremiah Watkins.
He's a good friend of mine.
He's fantastic. He's doing his own little show. It's
Stand Up on the Spot. Yeah.
He's running that bad boy. They're doing the Wayne Fetterman... film thing. They're going to show off a movie for the Wayne Fetterman Film Festival, which is going to be pretty sweet. Comedy Bang Bang is going to be there. Scott Aukerman, Doug Benson and his Doug Loves Movies is going to be there, which is going to be pretty fantastic.
Have you seen his new show? It's so good.
Getting
Doug with High.
Ah, dude, it's so good.
Oh my God, it's so great. I love that show. I literally watched it like yesterday or 2 days ago for the first time. Like, I just watched like a bunch of episodes.
Did you watch all of them?
Not all of them, but I watched it's too many episodes.
Have you seen the Todd Glass, Sarah Silverman one?
No, I saw the aftermath.
Oh, you saw the aftermath? So, James Adomian?
No, the aftermath was Todd Glass talking about like how, because they have like the actual video of the show, and then they actually. What they do is after the show, they try to do either another magic trick or do an extra commentary or whatever it is. With Todd, it was just an extra commentary. And he's just talking about, like, whenever he gets, like, he just noticed that whenever he gets too high or something, he talks too much. So he tells his brain a lot, like, be quiet, be quiet, be quiet. But then he's in a corner just like this. Just wants to talk.
Are you familiar with Todd Glass comedy?
Yeah.
Ah, dude.
I didn't like his last special, though. I mean, I haven't watched the entire
special?
Thing. I haven't watched the entire thing. It's just the first, I don't know, the first 15 minutes were so stale to me.
The first 15 minutes is material that I've seen from his 2001 special for Comedy Central. Because he talks about, you look really good. You look like a pig. No, not a bad pig, a thin, beautiful pig. Have you heard that bit? That's the beginning of
it. Yeah,
that
I saw it on that special.
Yeah.
But it was like...
And it's from 2001.
Maybe that's why, because it was so old, it just felt like that. Because I know him from Last Comic Standing. That's when I found him out.
God, I used to be a fan of Last Comic
Standing. Oh, my God, I was a huge fan.
I mean, but they kept...
I met Felipe. You know Felipe Esparza?
Esparza, yeah.
I just met him recently.
Los Holmes.
We went and saw a movie together.
What'd you say?
The Grudge Match.
Ooh.
Yeah, because our friend Joey Diaz, you know him?
I know Joey.
Yeah, Joey, he's in that movie, so he did this huge premiere. He just did this random get-together in North Hollywood. We were all smoking joints, like, right beside the theater for, like, 30 minutes, just passing. There were, like, 40 joints just passing and passing. We got so fucking blasted, and then we went to the movie theater. It was ridiculous, because when Joey came on screen, everybody just started fucking applauding. It was insane. And I just felt bad for the people that weren't part of the actual gathering, because there were only, like, 50 of us that were together that. And then Felipe was there, and I'm like, dude, you know how many times I voted for you in Last Comic Standing? Like, you don't even know.
Felipe was the last season, right?
Yeah, the last season.
Until the new one. Are you excited for that one? They're bringing back Last Comic Standing.
Man, but Greg Giraldo's not on it.
That's true, but he wasn't one of the original, like,
yeah,
judges anyways.
I was really psyched about it. But even though I don't think I might do it. I don't know. I'm just already done shows like that. Not exactly like Last Comic Standing, but shows like it's a long process to get on like that. And I'm kind of done with that stuff.
All right. Well, that's commendable.
It's a lot. Like you have to go audition, phone interviews. Like it's insane.
Well, that's the same thing. Like when you go audition for American Idol, and how many hoops you had to jump through just to appear on camera, which is insane. I auditioned for American Idol one of the seasons a couple years ago. Didn't get past the first section. They didn't like my rendition of Lollipop Lollipop by the Cordettes. I wasn't contemporary enough for them.
Can you give us an example?
Maybe I can. I am sort of fighting a cold, so my voice is a little deeper today.
Deeper.
I'm usually a much higher tenor, but now I'm more of a bass right now. Yeah, that bass. Yeah.
Have you done musical theater before?
I've done musical theater. Yeah, I did a lot of musical theater in high school, and then the first 2 years out of high school, I went back to my high school and did musical theater. It was great, man. I did production of Titanic, the musical, was in 2012. And my high school had invited me back, and they said, it's going to be an alumni show, so we're going to have current students and former students because the cast is about 40 people. And the amount of people that show up for musical theater at my high school, my old high school, maybe 5 people. But so I showed up as an alumni, and no other past students showed up. So I was the only alumni student in Titanic, the musical. And it's not based off the Leonardo DiCaprio movie. It's not. It came out the same year on Broadway that Titanic, the movie, came out. But it's not based on it at all. But, yeah, I did some musical theater, learned a little bit about my voice. I love to sing. I don't sing in the shower anymore. You know when I sing? I sing when I drive.
When you drive? I sing when I drive, too.
Oh, dude, I blast that shit.
Oh, my God. So I go crazy. Yeah, that's when I sing the most. Like, when I'm... Yeah, I don't sing that much when I'm taking a shower anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, I like to go over my ideas. Mm. Mainly, like, I think a lot about comedy or something I fucking got to do. I'm like, I need to pay this bill.
Right. Well, you know, it's insane how our minds work now. You and I, at least for myself, but I would imagine yourself, about we just think about comedy all the time. And you talk to someone that never thinks about comedy, and they look at you like you're insane.
Hell yeah.
You're insane. And
it's just everything, man. It's what I came here to do, honestly. Like, the whole acting, improv, all that is secondary. All that is, like, you know, not back burner, but it's there. It has helped me to become a better comedian, but at the end, that's what I want to do. Like, that's what really grew into me. Like, that's the first thing of art, if anything, that I saw. I mean, I saw movies and stuff, but I never really was like, I want to be, like, there. Like, that wasn't, like, my first dream. Like, my first dream was actually watching Richard Pryor, George Carlin, George Lopez, all those people. And I was like, man, they're there by themselves. Like, I thought that was, like, the ultimate thing. Like, they don't need nobody. They just need a microphone, and they're already up and ready to go. I'm like, I want to do that. That's what I want to do.
Yeah, well, that's fantastic, man. Yeah, I'm glad we met, by the way. Mm-hmm. I'm glad we met at the Ice House. It was like a one-in-a-million type thing. We had a good time at Roscoe's.
Oh, hell yeah.
You, I, Jenny Young, and Juanjico.
Especially when the bill came. That was the best time. My card is in here. Hold up.
Oh, yeah.
This is my card. Let me go back.
Juanjico just paid me back about a week ago. She paid me her end of that meal.
Yay.
Because it was about $15 to each of us, which is not bad. But yeah, she just paid me back like a week ago. Like,
I love how you bust the app real quick. Like, that's something you wouldn't have done in the, like, if we were comics in the 90s, you know?
Yeah, you're right. Because now we have that Square app for our phones and all that.
Don't worry. I take credit cards.
And they look at me like I'm crazy. Jenny looks at me. She's like, what? What do you mean you take credit cards? I'm like, yeah, I have Square. But I got that payment from Jenny and Juanjico in cash. She stuck it into my pocket while I wasn't paying attention, which is kind of creepy.
Oh, because was it one of those moments that she's like, okay, I got the money, and you were like, no, it's okay?
No, like, she didn't even mention it. She just, like, stuck money in my pocket.
Oh, okay.
And I kind of got over it. One, Jiko was the person that really helped me get into comedy seriously. She showed me where all the open mics were.
Yeah, she's going hard.
She is. I mean, she's only been here a year. She comes from Austin.
But that's all she does, right? You just stand up, straight up.
Yeah. I mean, she has two jobs now that I honestly don't know if she still has them. You know, she's in Austin right now as we speak. She'll be back by the time this podcast comes out. She'll be back in L.A. But, yeah, she just...
I'll have her on the podcast.
You should.
Yeah.
That'll be funny. You should.
Yeah.
You should
I'll have everybody. My goal is to sit with everybody who's awesome and talk to them and be great and bringing them and keep on bringing them. And
well, definitely someone who you need to have is Vince.
Vince, yeah.
Vince Caldera, everybody. He's someone you need to look out for. I'll always promote Vince.
I gave him my card. He hasn't called me yet.
Oh.
I tell him, hey, this is my information. Keep in touch. I mean, I got him on Facebook, too. Right. My friend on Facebook. But
yeah, it's funny because when you're talking on the podcast about, oh, there's this guy named Vince, and he's in high school, dog. And you're talking about him. You're talking about him. I'm like, wait, are we talking about the same guy? And I jumped on your Facebook, and mutual friends, yep, Vince Caldera. I'm like, oh, okay. And all the pieces lined up because then I realized, because you had told me, you know, before, you were at that show with a bunch of kids before the Ice House. And now it all just came together that you were with Vince and you were with his group and you were all that. And then you went to the Ice House.
It was a comedy class, like, you know, the one you took at East L.A. with Solomon. Mm-hmm. It was Susanna's piece. She was the one that gave me classes when I took it back in the day. And you know, she always hits me up, you know, trying to book me for spots. She's great at the improv. Like, she's pretty established there. She told me she's now moving to the Pasadena area.
Oh, cool.
So she's going to be pretty active at the Ice House. And she's really great at, you know, just producing shows and helping kids, you know, get on their feet. And she told me about this program that she had for kids that, you know, grew up in, like, really bad neighborhoods. And, you know, to try to get them away from all that bad stuff. And I can relate to that because I'm product of that, too. Like, usually people that come from comedies, usually people, I mean, not everybody, but the majority of comedians are people that had, like, really rough lives. And at some point, whatever it was, and I can relate to that. And I'm like, yeah, I'll do it for the kids. Yeah, let's do a show. And it's still more spots for me. And I know her that she's so cool that she will let me do, not, you know, I won't, it has to be a PG show just because there are going to be parents and stuff there. Right. But she will let me do as many minutes as I wanted to.
Oh, that's cool,
if anything.
Man. It's always great to have someone like that in your corner to help you out. Because I know my stand-up teacher, Jonathan, he'll book me every now and then for shows as a special guest for his graduating class at the improv. I mean, he still kind of sucks that he expects me to bring five or six people. And I invited my mom and her boyfriend to come see me at the improv. And they were going to put me on first. And I called my mom about 5 minutes before the show started to say, hey, are you parking or this and that? And so the improv is in the heart of Hollywood. And I said, hey, are you parking? Will you be here in a couple minutes? And she says, oh, no, I'm in Whittier, which is easily another 20 miles east. And I'm like, well, you said you were coming. And she's like, yeah, well, I wanted to go shopping today. And she just, and that got us into a huge fight about that. Because she went shopping with my grandmother, and I got really, really angry about that. Not that she went shopping. Because at that point in our lives, this was April of last year, my grandfather just recently passed away within 6 months of that. So they definitely needed that time to bond together, sister and mother, daughter and mother. And that's fine. But what angered me was no one called me to say, you know what, your grandmother and I need to spend some time together. I'm sorry we can't come to your show. And I never got that. And I never got an apology for that, which is interesting. So now my mom knows that I have this Ice House show. And she's like, oh, how can I get tickets? How can I get tickets? And I go, I don't know.
Just give him one of those blue ones.
I could, but I'm just at this point. I'm like, I really tried to make her see me at the improv. And she hurt me so bad in that. And I'm like, you know what?
Fuck you, mom.
I mean, essentially, I'm saying that. I mean, I love her to death. But yeah,
that's what you're doing. Fuck you, mom.
Yeah.
You're not getting this.
Hey,
switching cameras real quick.
Switching cameras.
Wow. He's getting you on camera.
Oh, that's cool.
It's cool.
Well, we were talking about, you know, comics having tough lives. Anything else in your life
I got raped as a kid. Nah.
That'll do it. That'll get you that Comedy Central Presents special for sure.
No, when I was watching the Jeselnik show, the Caligula, because it was like literally 3 days ago. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I was watching and I'm like, the thing I love about him is that I love comedians that mm-hmm. just set the tone right off the bat. I've been learning that when I do that, mm-hmm. I usually kill more. Mm-hmm. I like to be likable at first and then approach my really hard-hitting jokes. Mm-hmm. But usually if you said, it depends on the crowd, really. But when I like comedians a lot, especially on specials, that they just start right off the bat with, like, a really, like, knockout joke or a really, like, joke that you don't know how the audience necessarily is going to take it. Mm-hmm. And he started his special with a rape joke. And I'm like, yeah. Oh my God. Like, that's insane. And then I'm like, oh, I need to write. Okay. And I'm thinking, like, oh, I need to write like a really clever rape joke. And then I was reading like the notes that I was making. And I'm like, oh shit, I already have a rape joke here. I was like reading this joke that I thought it was a weed joke. Uh-huh. And it ended up being a rape joke. I'm like, wait, this is a rape joke. When I was like reading it back.
I know.
I got that down.
That's it's funny how we'll see these specials and we get really inspired and we'll write stuff, with the same influence from it. And then we read it and you're like, oh God, this is horrible. Because I know I saw that Anthony Jeselnik special and I wanted to write a rape joke. And so I wrote, and this is really, really bad, but I wrote, have you ever noticed that Asian men are never convicted of rape? It's because the woman never noticed either. It's just so bad. But it kills. It kills, and I'll keep doing that forever.
It kills unless you're in a room full of women that got raped.
Mm, yeah.
Guys get raped, too.
I try to filter them out of my shows. And I like to put signs outside of my clubs and let's say, no rape victims allowed.
Have you used that joke on stage?
No, I haven't. I'm writing it down now. I'm gonna tweet this because Twitter is what I do.
Twitter is what you do.
Twitter is what I do.
Trying to get more followers.
I need followers.
Plug that Twitter.
@ may I be funny.
May I be funny?
May I be funny. One word. Capital M in May. Capital I. Capital B for B. So may I be. So B-E.
What's your profile picture? Yeah. Custard?
Oh, that'll be so good. I would love that. Ah, dude. One of my favorite Twitter profiles, it's this guy named Alan Strickland Williams. And his Twitter profile, it's him lying on the hotel floor in Jesus crucifixion pose. So his legs together, his arms stretched out, and he's covered completely in headshots of his face. It's so cool. There's like 100 headshots, and it's just all pictures of him just covering his face. And like the camera's from above just looking down, and he's just hanging out, just covered in headshots. It's one of my favorite profiles.
That's an elaborate
It's funny cover as photo. Hell. I love it.
Like, just to set up the camera up there, mm-hmm. and then the headshots, the perfect pose. Mm-hmm. You probably tried it, like, 5 times to get it, like, right.
Yeah. Which is getting, you know, stuff like that is getting me thinking. Like, stuff like this podcast is getting me thinking. I want to start a podcast.
Yeah.
I want to do a podcast.
Yeah, man. Fuck it. And have me on it, too.
Oh, dude, I'm going to have you on it. You're familiar with Jerry Seinfeld's web series, right?
I just became familiar with it. The one about cars?
Yeah, Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. Mm-hmm. I want to start a podcast called Open Micers on Bikes, Ken and Kombucha. I think that's really funny.
That's cool.
It's just a play on that word. But I think that would be great.
I heard this. There's one. Have you heard of Death Squad?
Death Squad, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so Tony Hinchcliffe, mm-hmm. he has a show at the comedy. I definitely want to check it out. At the Comedy Store, basically, you throw your name in a hat, mm-hmm. and he picks 15, 25 comedians, something like that, mm-hmm. and you do 1 minute of material. Mm-hmm. And out of that minute, then it's like an open forum with, like, pretty pro comics, mm-hmm. and they just give you feedback on, like, how would they do your bit, mm-hmm. if it was their bit. Mm-hmm. And man, you'd go and you got notes.
I just heard about that about a month ago.
Yeah, it's called Kill Tony.
Kill Tony? Yeah, I heard about that. I threw my name in the hat once. I didn't realize. I thought I was signing up for the Comedy Store mic.
Mm-hmm. That's what I thought it was too. Like, yeah, but apparently it's that. So yeah. I'm like, oh, that's even awesomer. Because I get to work more at workshop.
Yeah, you know, it's that doing 1 minute spots is insane to me. Okay. To be it, but anyone that could do it well, I respect them with the utmost degree. Because you're putting your persona, your personality, and everything, and it's not just one liner. This is a whole like concise bit in 1 minute, and the people that do it well are amazing.
I can do one, maybe two bits in 1 minute, maybe, but that's it. I cannot push anything more. It's just gonna, I tend to set up too much. Mm-hmm. Like I always get notes of like you gotta trim the fat, you gotta get it down. I'm trying to get my jokes down now. With more transition, it's just because I like talking about a particular topic, and I stay with that particular topic for like 5 minutes, or like seven. I can talk about one topic for like 10 minutes.
Oh yeah,
straight up. I mean, I can probably talk about one topic in an hour, just one topic. I bounce over other topics, but I come back to the original topic at the end.
Oh, dude, I ended up with 15 minutes just on my handicapped girlfriend, and I was killing. I mean, I jumped to that open mic scene. I was killing with this material. I was doing a 20-minute spot 3 weeks into once I finally started doing it like hardcore. I got a 20-minute spot at this bar, and it was the most amazing little show I've ever done. And I was killing with all this material. And then she moved away. Then I started doing material about her falling more and more in love with me and me just not feeling it just because she's not physically here with me. Mm. And then we broke up. And I've thrown away all that material. I'll use it every now and then. But, like, to me, I was able to say some of those awful things because at the end of the day, I still was with her and I still cared about her. Some could say loved her. But now it's just mean to me and I don't do any of that material. And now I'm feeling what it's like to be an open micer because now I'm trying to come up with my own ideas and my own little, have you ever noticed that airplane food? And just suffering through that. Mm-hmm. And, you know. That's the process, man.
It takes a while, man. I was holding on to a lot of material that I had. And, I had a lot of college stuff. I would just do those bits all over college. And they would kill. And I had a lot of little bits here and there that they were just killer. Mm. And sometimes when you find that stuff, you just want to hold on to it because you're just afraid of trying new things. And I was holding to those bits for the longest times. But you, for some reason, when you got that confidence, especially on your writing, like if you have that confidence, like, fuck it, I'm just going to write whatever it is. And I'm just going to sell it as hard as I can. Mm-hmm. And you just... You know, just say like, you know, accept failure. Once you accept failure, I think that's when you most succeed. Because like, even if you bomb, you're going to go back up and do it again. You know, you're not going to be like, well, I bombed. I'm quitting forever.
Yeah. And that's exactly what happened to one of my friends. He became a one-liner comic, which he liked. And he was doing okay. And then we did a show at Flabbers and he bombed horribly. And literally the mic went from just below his chin to his waist because he just freaked out. He just couldn't handle the pressure. And he hasn't done comedy since. It can be a tough business, especially since it's just you out there. Mm-hmm. You know, it's you being really, really vulnerable. And, you don't see that a lot with improv because if you were with improv, at least you're failing as a group.
Yeah.
You know, but stand-up, you're completely alone. And if people don't like you, they don't like your material, which means they don't like you. Mm-hmm. It could easily be that way. You could easily just do it in your mind and say, oh, yeah, they don't like me.
But my biggest note for everybody listening to the podcast and wanting to be a stand-up comedian or some kind at some point, is just be you, man. Be you. That's my biggest note I say because I've seen a lot of comedians that unfortunately, like, they do like a gimmick and then they get stuck with that gimmick or they they start doing things that mainly they probably think is cool now, but then at the end they regret it because they just got stuck with that. I even wrote a note. I remember that I wanted to do a sketch called like the comedian that got stuck with one bit. That he just has that one bit. And it was, in a way, it reflects me because I was like that too. Like, I had, you know, a couple bits that I would just do over and over and over and over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. It's because I knew it killed. But it gets to that point, the whole Todd Glass thing. Like, you know, it probably the reason I didn't like his first 15 minutes was because it felt like old material. Mm-hmm. And that's why it made me, like, tune out. And
that's true. But, you know, now that it's out in the world in a physical form, he's writing new shit. I saw him perform at the UCB, half an hour of new material. And it was just really, really funny. He was talking about SeaWorld and the whales and how...
The whole Blackfish thing?
Yeah, well, he didn't really talk about Blackfish in general. He was just saying, yeah, imagine this. You take a killer whale who swims all the time in the ocean and you stick him in a kiddie pool. And then you surround that kiddie pool with a bunch of tiny creatures that just abuse you and hit you. Of course he's going to kill them. Of course he's going to eat them. And so that's his whole angle on it. It's a lot of fun. And I love Todd. Have you listened to a show? The Todd Glass Show?
The podcast?
The podcast is so
good. No, man. I listen to too many podcasts. I don't think I have any more room for more podcasts.
What would you say? If you had to give someone a suggestion what podcast to listen to, what would you say?
It all depends, man, on what's your type of style. Because, for example, I listen to a lot of comedy podcasts.
Which is great.
I'm in love with comedy.
That's fantastic.
My favorite thing to do.
Okay, but there has to be one podcast in your mind that you feel, if you can share this with other people, it's for the better.
I would say the Church of What's Happening Now, the Joey Diaz one.
Yeah.
Just because I'm a big fan. The first podcast I listened to and the one that inspired me to do a podcast was the Joe Rogan one, the Joe Rogan Experience. But that's more intellectual. That's more like if you want to learn about what's happening in the world and things like that. But I would recommend the Church of What's Happening Now with Joey Diaz just because he not only motivates you to do something, like he's constantly like telling his listeners, like, you know, get up your ass and start doing some shit, like, you know, stop being lazy, it's a new day and all that. And but he also puts it in a perspective that he is a guy that he thinks very less of himself in the sense of, like, he was a criminal, he went to jail and everything. And he had, little by little, you know, he's becoming this huge star. Like, he's been in The Longest Yard now in Grudge Match. And it's all been because he's been working really hard. Like, he's been submitting. He even says that, like, I don't even have an agent. I submit my shit. Like, I just send my headshots and I get called in. And but it's because he's been working hard like that. And he puts things into perspective that it's just, it makes. And he thinks of himself like, you know, an ordinary guy, and that's where we all are, you know, ordinary people. And but he's just saying that if you work really hard, you can get to whatever point you want. He thought he was only worthy to become an extra in a movie, and he has lines with Robert De Niro.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy.
Well, you know, that's a good podcast to listen to.
What's your favorite podcast?
Steve Dez Island. The more I'm listening to it, definitely becoming one of the up and coming podcasts that I'm really enjoying. But I gotta say, Todd Glass Show, I'd never laugh harder. It's 3 hours.
3 hours, hey.
It's getting to 3 hours of just bits and jingles and fun and silly dancing, and it's just, if I can be not a guest on it, but if I could just be in that room when they're recording it. And I know some open micers that I'm friends with that have been on this podcast as just guests sitting in the corner. I would love that. That would be great.
You can make it happen, man.
Oh, yeah. And I will. I'm getting there.
That's one of my goals, too. I want to get on the podcast I listen to. Yeah. Like, I listen to that. I listen to Joe Rogan. I listen to Curtain Jerks. Shout out to Curtain Jerks. It's a wrestling, comedy wrestling podcast.
Nice.
From my friends from Second City.
Wow.
I listen to The Groundlings podcast, Improv Nerd. Fuck, I got so many podcasts, dude. So many. Tom Segura,
yeah,
has a podcast. Really, your mom's house. Really good podcast. A Brian Callen show.
There's a new network of podcasts called the West. I think it's West Side Comedy Podcasts.
West Side Comedy,
and it's a bunch of comics on the West Side of L.A. Like near the 405.
Oh, it's not related to a theater? There's a theater called West Side Comedy.
Right. It's all recorded there, too. But it's a lot of comics you'll see on that side of town. But some of the stuff they're doing, and I just downloaded a bunch of stuff from their stuff, is so good. Neil Nanda's prequel takes the first year of stand-up from these comics and just discusses that in an hour. I forgot the woman's name, but her podcast is called Too Soon. And then her I guess, fiancé drowned while she was out and about. And so her podcast is about talking to people about tragedies and all that and just getting it all out there. And that's a really good podcast. Nick Has a Pool House. Have you heard that one before?
No.
That one's very... it's an interview podcast. It takes place in a pool house. It's nice. It's got one of my favorite opening songs, though. It's a falsetto guy. It's like, Nick has a pool house. Nick has a pool house. Why won't you come inside and tell him all of your secrets? And my voice is all fucked up now, but...
Is that Daft Punk?
No, it's just I don't know who it is, but it's just one guy.
No, but it sounds like Daft Punk, like you said. Because there's a song called... I wish there's some... Dun, dun, dun,
dun, dun. It might be.
Yeah, like, honestly, there's a Daft Punk song. Let me put it... It has to be...
Look it up.
I got it right here. I got it, man.
Well, while you're looking that up, we were talking about... what we can share with your viewers, with your listeners, some tips. If you are looking at doing stand-up in L.A. or doing stand-up anywhere, what I've learned, even in the 1.5 years I've been doing it, is just be nice to everybody. You know, everyone that's doing comedy is doing it, for the most part, because they love it. And yeah, you have to respect that. Even if you're not a big fan of their comedy. And, you know, earlier we talked about Jamar. I respect Jamar, and I'll never say anything bad about Jamar because he puts in a lot of work. Maybe not so much at the Ice House that one day, but he puts in a lot of work, and he loves stand-up, and there are plenty of people all over. And now that we have podcasts, and now that we have the internet, you know, comedy is just springing up in the smallest cities and the smallest towns, and, you know, it's going to get bigger and bigger, and we're going to have an influx of comedians. We're going to have... these 17-year-old high school kids just kicking our ass.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm happy they are. I'm happy. I'm all about progress and success.
No, I'm excited. As long as they have something to say.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't
know. As long as they're not stealing my jokes.
Right. I don't want to hear humor about the cafeteria food. I do not want to hear that. Vince has a bit that he's doing now about being senior class president.
Yeah, I heard it.
Which is really, really funny.
It's extremely funny.
It's extremely dated. It literally can get another year out of it, and then he's done.
Or he's still in high school, right?
Yeah, he's in high school, so he'll be done in June.
Okay.
And his birthday is.
He's making sure he wasn't playing with me.
No, he's not playing. You've seen his face. He's a young cat.
Yeah, he's a young cat. He looks super young.
All right, let's play this Daft Punk song, baby.
I think it's this one.
My mind is blown. It sounds almost exactly like it. It could be an homage. This is great. And this is from the new album?
Yeah, the new album. See, because as soon as you were doing, I'm like, that's the melody of this song.
But I'm like, it's a Daft Punk song. As far as I know, I mean, the podcast has been out longer than that. It's been going on at least 2 years, I believe.
They probably changed it to this.
Maybe. Daft Punk, Nick Has a Pool House, is going to sue your ass. What's that? No, I'm not.
Bam. Ooh. Debunked.
Yeah.
So fuck you, Pool House.
Oh, we're not the fucking Pool House. We're fucking Daft Punk here.
Hey, I want to fuck in a pool house.
All right. That would be great.
That would be amazing.
I would just like to
You know, I saw one time I stayed in the Marriott in Orlando, Florida. Oh my God. I was staying in the Marriott, right? And I go for a swim like at 2 in the morning. Mm-hmm. And I see these two kids just swimming around, right? Mm-hmm. It was only 3 people in the pool. I had the whole, by that time, I don't know why the fuck I had the whole snorkel thing. Like, I don't know, in the pool. Like, I was into that shit. And, like, so I would go down, when I would go down the, you know, in the water, like, I would see everything clear as day.
Right.
And when I was going, diving down, like, I saw this kid, like, aggressively, and we're underwater, aggressively fingering this girl.
Oh, shit.
Like that shocked my mind because I just thought, oh, they're just being cute couple wise over there in the corner. And then when I got down, I actually see, I'm like, this guy is like going in.
Man. Oh, okay. When you say kids, how old are we talking about?
Oh, they had to be, because I was probably, when that happened, I was probably 16, 17. Mm-hmm. They had to be around the same age.
Okay.
Probably 15, 16, 17 too.
All right. Okay, that makes more sense. Because before I knew where the story was headed, I was imagining, like, middle schoolers in the pool just hanging out. And then you're, like, aggressively fingering her. And I'm like, oh, shit.
No, they had to be at least high school. But they were clearly kids. They weren't in college or anything. They were, like, high school, my age, around at that time. But it was mind-boggling to me, like, because I was just going out for a swim, and they are, like, right there, right in front of my face, right in the Marriott. I didn't know I was going to get all these experience in this Marriott, you know?
Steve Dez Island, brought to you by...
Aggressive fingering
children.
Buy it on Amazon.com. Have you ever seen, like, something like that? Really shocking. Like, whenever you weren't expecting sex, just sex right in front of your face.
Yeah. I don't know if I should talk about
any moment you can talk about.
Yeah, one of my close friends, I went into his room and I didn't realize he was there, and he was sitting on his chair, and he had his lady on him, riding him like a hurricane.
Did you walk in the door or something?
I walked in, and couldn't see much of the lady. Some buttocks.
Oh, it was dark.
It was dark enough.
Okay.
But they were facing. I mean, they were facing each other.
Mm-hmm.
But they were, like, right in front of the door. So when I opened the door, I didn't really see much of him or her, like, besides their backs and, like, his head.
Mm-hmm.
But what I did see was a lot of jumping balls. There's a lot of bouncing balls. Got some ball bouncing up in her.
Ball bouncing. I saw one time. I remember when I went to performing arts college out here in Hollywood. I lived in this. I suck, dude. I lived in this living room. Mm. And we were three guys living in a fucking living room, right?
It's so trouble.
The first time it happened, I was the first time it happened multiple times. So first time it happened, I walk in. It was like 6 o'clock, p.m. And I'm walking in because I forgot my wallet or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going out with some people, just going out for drinks or whatever it was. And like I walked in the door, and it was dark. And he was just having sex with this girl.
Mm-hmm.
And I just walked in. Like, I'm just grabbing my wallet. See you later. Like, I made it even more awkward. But I'm a person, I'd never feel awkward in any situation at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's something that, I don't know, people bring it. But I like to make things more awkward, but I don't feel awkward. You know, it's like a tingly feeling that you have.
Yeah.
I don't have that anymore. Like, that's lost. So, but I like to make things even more awkward. I'm like, I'm just grabbing this wallet over here.
Really slowly.
Really slowly.
And glad to know you're not a faggot.
Faggot. My kid's a faggot. And then the other morning was it was a Saturday morning, 10 a.m. Like, I literally wake up, and I go like this. I open my eyes, and all I see is just straight, like, doggy style with the same fucking girl.
Well, the same girl.
At least it wasn't the same girl, right? At least they're sharing their diseases together. And but then, and they quickly, like, cover themselves. I'm like, you don't have to hide it. Like,
yeah,
whatever. And then I'm like, okay, I'll get dressed and leave.
Yeah. Just Just, but you watched it for half an hour first before you got dressed.
Yeah,
right?
I had to get off.
Yeah.
You know?
Of course. I mean,
you always have to get off.
If you're gonna fuck in front of me, you're gonna let me get off.
Come on.
Yeah.
Come on. Yeah.
That's common courtesy. That's part of the roommate handbook.
I don't want nothing of it. She can probably suck my dick, but that's it.
Yeah. Well.
That's it. But nah, not really. No, that roommate of mine was really disgusting. Oh my god, no. Fuck
what
that.
Race
like
was he?
I don't know. He's like, I think he's biracial, like half white, half black.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of those dudes. But he, I don't know. He was just, you know, when you have that roommate, like for example, I have a roommate now, but he's the most coolest fucking guy ever. Mm-hmm. Like he's fucking chill. He doesn't give me problems, anything. But that dude, it was just the most, you know, like one of those friends that you have and you know he's fucking filthy.
Yeah.
That you're like, I don't even know what this girl sees in this guy, like,
ooh, yeah.
One of those friends. So,
well, I definitely have a couple of those guys.
I was like, that's great. Like, anybody who he touches, I don't want to touch them. Like,
oh, geez,
because that person probably has AIDS, like, at this moment.
Well, yeah, there's always some people like that in your life,
mm-hmm.
which is insane. But I'm shocked that you have a roommate here on this beautiful island. I thought you were alone. That you were alone on this beautiful island.
I'm alone sometimes in this island, but sometimes I need some company.
You do got
some gaming company.
Some gaming company. Not going to happen. I love how I just keep negating that. I'm like, nope, not happening.
No, not going to happen.
Not going to happen.
Not going to happen.
Not going to happen.
But on that note, we reached the end of the podcast, man.
Oh, have we?
Yeah.
Oh.
See? It went so quick.
It was too long.
We gotta easily
edit about 50 minutes of this. We gotta put it in standard definition, 720 by 1080p, and we gotta, you know, you gotta tighten it up. You know, just like the comics tell us. You know, we gotta trim the fat.
Trim the fat. Just get to the funny, man. Yeah. Get to the funny. What the fuck?
Oh, was there even any on here?
Who knows, man? Who knows?
No, but this was fun, man.
It was really fun, man.
Thank you for having me.
You're great, man. I'm not here to do bits. We're here to talk, man. Converse.
Oh.
Just do things. Get to know each other even more, man. This is the second time we're hanging out together.
That is. You're absolutely right. This is the second time.
I know.
And
For all I know, you might be a rapist.
Oh, well, I was saving that for the second time I came.
I didn't want to say that. That was in your credits. Imagine if you had that, like, your resume. Like, oh, I was in
rapist
How I Met Your Mother. I was the rapist connoisseur.
Well, so you got it. Hour and a half into the podcast.
Did I say it right?
You got connoisseur.
Oh, my God. Standing ovation. Standing ovation.
Oh, if you're not standing up right now, if you're not cashing in those happy checks, like Pete Holmes says, yeah, I don't know what's wrong with you.
Yeah. Have you seen his new special? Really good.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty good.
Nice job. I mean, it was good.
It gets good towards the end.
You're right.
Like, it's like at first it was like, but then it gets really good.
All right. Since we do have to get out of here, let's name one special in 2013 that stood out the most to us.
Oh, my. That's difficult.
In hindsight. Because, you know, we.
You go first. I got to think.
Being the first podcast in the new year, we didn't really talk about 2013 in review. We never did that.
Oh, no, we didn't.
No. A special that really stood out to me, and I've always found her very, very funny, but the special was never on my radar.
We probably are thinking about the same thing, because I'm thinking about a girl, too.
All right. Well, let's see. But I'm gonna preface this a little bit, and then we're going to both say it aloud, okay?
Okay.
And see what it is. But, you know, I found her very, very funny, but her special wasn't on my radar. And it wasn't until like I read like a split-sided article about the special when it was coming out on DVD that I had to see it. And when I did, it was just something phenomenal. So are you ready?
So I'm ready. Now I think we're not talking about the same thing.
Well, that's good. That's fun. One, two, three.
Sarah Silverman. Shaw.
I haven't seen Sarah's special. Is it good?
Oh, my God. It's great. Oh, it's cool. We are
Miracles.
We're Miracles. Yeah.
Yeah.
HBO. Great stuff. Great stuff. She did it in a small theater, too, which I love. It was only like 50 people.
Mm. Ooh, nice.
It's great. It's great.
Maria Bamford's special, her video special, was filmed just in front of her parents.
Mm.
She released that early in 2013. And it was her opening act was Jackie Cation. and then Matt Knutson playing the piano, and then her only audience were her two parents. Hmm. And she did the entire special, and it was recorded and videotaped in front of her parents. Hardest audience in the room. But, oh, that's great. I really want to see the Sarah Silverman special.
Oh, yeah.
You should see the Kristen Schaal one. That one is really, really good. That's definitely something I recommend. You look up Bo Burnham's What, which just came out at the end of December.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
It's really, really good. I really, love Bo.
Oh, my God. I love the, again, his last bit was incredible to me.
We think we know you?
Yeah, we think we know you. Fact. That whole thing, the whole pointing thing, was so awesome.
That hit me on a really deep level when everything pieces together and it's like, we think we know you. We think we know you. I'm like, he's so deep.
He's making a statement, man.
He's making a huge statement.
Huge statement. And that's what stand-up's for, man.
Yeah, man.
It's to speak your voice out, and that's what it's supposed to be like.
There you go.
I'm glad he did that. Like, it's really different. I have very, very similar views to Bo. Mm-hmm. In some points I don't, but I just think he's a masterpiece.
Oh, he's great. Mm. Even Mike Birbiglia's special, like Best Friend's Girlfriend.
I haven't finished it. Boyfriend. I haven't finished it, man. I always watch like the first 10 minutes and then I stop.
Admittedly, I tried to watch it 3 times and I only got 10 minutes in. I'm like, well, this sounds just like Sleepwalk with Me, so I'm done. But then once I finally sat down and actually listened to it, I choked up at the end. It's been described as a romantic special, and I choked up. I'm like, this is really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
But that has been Steve Dez and Mark Alexander discussing podcasts.
By the way, you want to plug something before we leave?
Yeah, I could. I have
plug dates, plug Twitter, Facebook. All
yeah,
that
well,
stuff.
I'll definitely February 16th. I'll be at the Ice House, Pasadena. Which is, I don't know, is it stage 2 or is it the main room?
I think it's, I don't even know, dude. I think it's stage 2. I believe it's stage 2.
No, it's one of the rooms. So you can come see me February 16th. There's a couple good comics on there, but definitely February 9th is the show you want to go see, because that's got Steve Dez, that has Juan Gico, that has Jenny Young. These really great comics, all three of them I love. And they're going to have a killer show. I'm going to be there February 9th. Hanging out with all those guys. So you can see me there February 16th. My Twitter, I would appreciate more than 60 followers, is at May I Be Funny. Everything's spelled out, and it's one concise word. Mark Alexander, you can look me up. Alex, spelled the traditional way. And then a Z, an A, an N, a D. And then we skip the E and go straight to the R. So it's Mark Alexander. But yeah, that's all my plugs. And hopefully you guys will see more of me to come in 2014.
If not, just stop by the farmer's market.
Oh, yeah. Come by the, you know, if you're in LA, come to a farmer's market and you'll see me there. I'm a dessert connoisseur selling Filipino bread puddings and flan, Filipino style flan.
I make amazing flan.
Do you?
Oh, yeah. Vanilla flan, though.
Did you make any today?
No. Mm. I can make some.
Yeah, well, that takes hours.
Yeah, it does.
That takes some time.
Takes some like 3 hours or so.
And I'm going to the aquarium after this.
Aquarium of the Pacific.
Yeah.
That's a commercial.
I know. I'm so excited to go. I haven't gone since I was a little kid, and I'm taking my 2-year-old brother to go.
Didn't you see Blackfish?
Yeah. And I ate sushi right after. I ate sushi right after Blackfish. But that's my plugs. Thank you, guys. Thank
he doesn't
you so
give
much.
A fuck, guys. He doesn't give a fuck.
Look, hopefully I'll have a podcast soon. I would love to have Steve.
Oh, hell yeah, man. And I'm down to help you out, set it up, if anything, if you need help. And after you check out Mark's stuff, go ahead and check out my stuff. Every single detail you need to know, go to stevedes.com to check it out. Right now, I am basically performing every single day. So I'm having no breaks. My biggest shows that you want to definitely go check it out is tonight. Tonight, since tonight is Wednesday, January 8th, over here in the studios, I'm going to be tonight in the Fernando Britt Show at Echoes Under Sunset. It's going to be a really fun show. It's going to be improv in between music, and I'm going to be doing stand-up in between, too. So come and check it out. And my show on February 9th on the Ice House in Pasadena, I believe is on stage, too. Go and check it out. But for every single performing date, just go to stevedes.com/tour. Mm-hmm. I have it there detailed. And it's... it would be way more easier for you guys to find. Bam. There we go. See,
there you go.
There we go.
Professionalism.
Professionalism.
You can't even tell the space.
You can't tell at all. There's like a big chunk of space.
There's a huge chunk of space. We were talking about existentialism. Some really deep issues.
And MNDMA, however you spell that shit. But yeah, guys, I'll see you on the next Steve Dez Island podcast.
Take care, guys.
Oh, shit. Things are just going wrong here today. Okay, now, I'll see you on the next Steve Dez Island podcast, okay?
You've been listening to the Steve Dez Island podcast. Be sure to visit stevedez.com for more information about this episode, as well as past and future episodes. Rate and review this episode on iTunes. Don't forget to follow Steve Dez on Twitter at SteveDezTV and like him on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/Steve Dez Show. See you next time.